Shuttle 19 Uniform, thank you, descend to flight level 110.
Zero, Shuttle 19 Uniform.
Zero 28 Romeo Yankee, we're climbing flight level 70 on the Otago departure.
Emirates 6 after bay, continue right turn on navigation now to Dulles.
Blue Messenger for Victor Hotel, turn right heading 325.
Hello and welcome to For Flying Out Loud, a podcast that aims to inspire, empower and help all of our listeners to dream bigger. My name is Andrew Neofitu and I'm super happy to welcome you to another inspirational interview in season 2 of For Flying Out Loud. If you enjoy the episodes and you want them to keep coming, please consider showing your support and buy me a coffee. You can find a link in the episode description. Now, one of the great things about aviation is the ability to create a community. Whether you're a pilot, cabin crew, an engineer, or just a plain ab geek. I've been so lucky to experience so many areas of aviation, and now in my 32nd year since I took my first training flight, it's a real privilege to be giving back to the aviation community and to new aviators, as so many have done with me. One of the ways I'm able to engage and hopefully inspire others is through social media. Now, we all know it can have its downsides, but when a community comes together to support each other, it's a fantastic way to engage with people from all over the world. For any of you that follow Flight Deck Wingman on Instagram, and thank you by the way, you'll hopefully relate to the positive message that I try to convey, and I'm so incredibly grateful for all of the aviation and inspirational stories, which I promise to keep coming. In this episode, we're going to talk more about founding a community and the benefits that it can bring. The For Flying Out Loud podcast is brought to you by Flight Deck Wingman, expert support to help you pass your airline, cadetship or flight school selection process. She's the Marketing Director of Transair Flight Equipment, an Aviation Ambassador for the Department of Transport, 2 years running, and a private pilot with helicopter and fixed-wing licences. She also has an admirable following of more than 230,000 followers on Instagram and is the founder of Elevate Her Aviation. Today, it's a great pleasure to welcome Catherine Maloney to the For Flying Out Loud podcast. Hello, Catherine, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm very well. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
You're welcome. It's really great to see you. I always start these podcasts, as all of my listeners will know, by asking where your journey in aviation started. So just wondering if you can give us a quick sort of précis of how it all began for you.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, my journey into aviation, I think, probably wasn't a normal one compared to most people. So it's quite interesting, really, how I got into it. But my dad's a pilot. He is one of my, if not my one aviation hero. And I grew up watching him fly and display fly and going around air shows with him and my brother. But to be honest, when I was little, I was far more interested in the ice creams and bouncy slides at the Shoreham Air Show than watching any particular flying.
He doesn't love a bouncy castle.
No, exactly, exactly. You know, tough competition there for my dad. But you know, I was extremely lucky to grow up within aviation and I was constantly surrounded by it. And I think when you're surrounded by it, you don't fully appreciate how amazing it is. So it was never something that I really considered going into or being a part of. But when I was 18, I went to Transair Flight Equipment and I started working in a warehouse, just picking and packing parcels. And I'd been there for a little while. I really enjoyed it. And I said to my dad, you know, I really want to work here and I really want to progress. I want to go into sales. I want to go into trade sales. And he said, yeah, absolutely. That's great. But you have to know something about flying. You cannot go into this and not know anything about aviation. And I said, you know, that's a fair cop. I get that. So he said, look, do a trial lesson. Doesn't matter what in. Just go have fun. Learn one side of the aircraft from the other. And then, yeah, we'll talk more. So I said, yeah, sure. Walked myself down to Advanced Helicopters at Shoreham Airport because basically I thought helicopters was cool or were cool. And I didn't think much beyond that, to be honest. I had a trial lesson and that one flight completely changed my life. From getting on the controls myself, from flying it myself, completely changed my perspective of the entire industry and of flying. And I suddenly realized really what it was all about and why, you know, my dad was so obsessed with it and so many people are, and why it's such a great community in the UK. So really that's how I got into aviation. So once I did that first lesson, I decided, you know, I really want to see this through. So I committed to doing my PPLH, which was amazing. Had a fantastic instructor. Great journey for me. I think learning to fly is about so much more than just learning the skills. It's a real personal journey. And I say kind of journey in inverted commas, but it really is. And I learned a lot about myself and really built some self-confidence as well. So it was a really fantastic opportunity. After I got my PPLH, I flew for a few years, just building time and hours in helicopters. And then COVID came about and we're all locked down and couldn't really do any flying, which was a great shame. And I got a lot of time to sit there and think about where I wanted my flying to go and what I wanted to experience. And I thought, you know what, I'm really missing out on so much of GA in particular. Fixed wing is amazing. There's so many facets, as you know, with, you know, tail dragging, gliding, microlights, aerobatics. There's so many options and things I wasn't experiencing. So I took the decision to start my PPLA and I passed that last year. And I'm so glad that I did my PPLA. It completely transformed my flying. I had a fantastic instructor, ex-military instructor. He's wonderful and he improved my aviating so much. I'm not ashamed to say that my aviating probably wasn't that great after I finished my PBRH. I didn't have a lot of awareness about what was going on around me. And my understanding of aviation as a whole, I don't think was that great. So taking the time to learn fixed wing really just improved my all-round appreciation of the industry. And I had a lot of fun as well. It's amazing.
Great. So what I want to know, Catherine, is what's more dangerous, bouncy castles or helicopter flying?
Bouncy castles.
I think so. Do you remember having some, I just remember having some, you know, it's like you get on those bouncy castles, you go as high as you can, don't you? I'd love to go on a bouncy castle now.
No, some of my fondest childhood memories are going to the Shore Mare show and being with my brother and causing havoc, not really watching the flying, unfortunately. I wish now that I'd taken way more attention with the flying. And
whereas
I'd
like to go and get on a bouncy castle now.
Yeah.
Well, you said that it's taking you, you know, you've learned a lot about flying with your ex-military instructor. I think I know, actually, a guy called Toby. Would it have been Toby or was it somebody else?
Yeah,
I know Toby. Yeah, an ex-Red Arrows guy. I've also done a bit of helicopter flying and I want to have a little bit more of a chat about helicopters and because I can see the fascination, but I want to know from your point of view what you really love about flying helicopters, because I still see you doing it. So what is it you love about it?
I love that. I love them. I mean, let me get it straight. All flying is good flying. You know, it's all great. But helicopters are a particular challenge. They really work your brain. A lot of places don't have a set approach or a circuit like you would do necessarily in fixed wing. So it's a lot more of focus on what you think is the most appropriate thing to do. They're extremely maneuverable close to the ground, which is very fun. There's a lot of different skills that you can learn, like sloping ground, or even in the Enstrom, I was taught to do a no pedals landing to simulate if you lost tail rotor authority, which is very exciting and fun.
That sounds terrifying.
But yeah, it's impressive to see what the machine can do. I mean, obviously you don't do this without an instructor who knows what they're doing, but you know, when you get the chance, it's great fun and they're just such fascinating machines. I definitely think I did my training the easy way around, though. I think it's far easier to learn helicopter if you have no previous conception of flying at all.
Right.
So I think that really helped me. So I think if you go from fixed wing to helicopter, all of the inbuilt things you have already about flying, they can maybe hinder into your training. But yeah, I just love them. I just think they're so much fun, honestly.
Do you know, well, it's funny you should say that. I found it okay. Now, I don't know, never trade luck for ability is my motto. I went from flying Hawks at halfway through my military flying training. And then before I went to do my Harrier conversion, we had to learn how to hover. So we went on a course at RAF Shorebury for 5 hours flying a squirrel. And do you know what? It was probably some of the most fun flying I've ever done. And it made me think, actually, do I want to go fly helicopters?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds amazing, honestly. I mean, you've had a fantastic flying career. It's epic,
Yeah, well, it's I suppose it continues to be reasonably epic, but not as epic as yours looks at the moment, I have to say. Tell us more about helicopters that mere mortals that have never flown one don't know about. What would you say? What are the big things?
They're very much on feel, like almost completely on feel. Learning to hover, I think, is one of the most challenging things you can do. And one day you just wake up and you can just do it. You have the feel there. It's taken hours and you have no idea what has changed from one day to the next that enables you to do that. And that is the funniest feeling in the world, because after you've learned how to hover, you then can't not do it, if you see what I mean. You can never be out of control again. You always know how to do it after that. It's a really bizarre feeling, which is fantastic. It's great fun. And as soon as you land, when you're learning to hover, you want to take off and do it again, because you think, oh, next time I'll get it, next time I'll nail it. And I love that feeling. I think that's fantastic. And it was something that I felt again properly when I did my tailwheel conversion this year on the Cub. So after every flight I landed and I wanted to go straight back up again and go, you know what, next time I can nail it, I swear.
That's what makes it people keep coming back though, isn't it, really?
Exactly.
That's what makes me keep going back. Exactly that. Yeah, you know, it was always something to learn, isn't it? And, you know, 30, oh God, I don't know now, this is going to be embarrassing. 1992 I started learning how to fly. When was it for you, Catherine? Like 2022 or something? I'm joking. A lot later than me.
I started in 2016 and I started flying fixed wing, I think, in 2020, late 2020.
2015, yeah. That makes me want to be sick, quite honestly. Yeah. But anyway, 1992, but 32 years later, I've still not done a perfect flight. So yeah, there's always stuff to learn. So talk to me about some of the aerobatics you've been doing, because I've seen you in a Bulldog, which I flew back in 1995 sort of time. But talk to me about all the aerobatics and what you've been getting into.
I mean, I've only done some very light aerobatics myself so far, but I just love it. I've been extremely fortunate to be able to backseat a lot of aerobatics and had some experiences with some really great aerobatic aircraft, and I just love it. I love going upside down. I think it's great for handling as well. I also think it's great to see the limits of your aircraft and see how far you can push it. I think that's a really healthy thing to do, obviously, you know, with an instructor or someone who knows what they're doing. But I just think it's the most wonderful 4D experience, and I would be very happy to spend most of my time upside down, to be honest. I haven't done a proper course yet with aerobatics, but it's something I hope to do in the future quite soon. I've tried to really spend my time, because I was obviously a very low-timed fixed-wing pilot. I wanted to build my hours on the Bulldog and just get really comfortable with it. And there is obviously, if you're flying two different types of aircraft at once, like helicopters and fixed-wing, I want to make sure that I'm really comfortable with both. And I think currency is very much key. So I've really been focusing on building time in the Bulldog. And yeah, hopefully soon I'll go and do a proper course, because it's just the best fun.
It really is, isn't it? And I watch a couple of people. There's one guy I follow on Instagram, Art someone or other his name is, if you've seen him, he's a Polish guy. Insane, absolutely insane. And then there's also a lady, I think her name's Svetlana, and she flies a Russian, I think it's a cap, it's a big thing with massive gangly wheels, and she just always looks so cool when she's flying.
Yeah,
it, like,
so
you know,
cool.
Yeah, she really is amazing. So what would you say the biggest challenges you've had to overcome in all of this flying training that you've done?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think it's different for everybody, but, you know, just speaking for myself personally, I think the biggest challenge for me was to trust myself and believe in myself. I'm not a naturally overly confident person. And when I got into flying, I never thought this was something I could do. I probably at school would have been voted least likely to be a pilot, in fact, out of everyone in my year. So it's been a bit of a challenge for me to overcome that and go, hey, look, you know, you can do this. You are doing this. You know, trust yourself. You are more than capable. I don't think I'm alone in that. I think a lot of people actually have that same inner struggle a lot of the time, going, you know, am I good enough to do this? Can I do this? But you can, you so can. But it takes a lot of time and a lot of experiences to believe in yourself. And I think I'm definitely still a work in progress when it comes to that. I mean, really, my career in aviation has been very short so far. You know, it's only been, what, 7 or 8 years. So hopefully I'll continue to improve and learn to believe in myself more and trust myself more. But yeah, I think that's a big challenge. And it's, like I said, it's not just me. I think a lot of people feel the same too.
Definitely. And we'll have a bit more chat about some of the reasons behind that later. But I think a lot of people do. In fact, do you know, I was chatting to a friend of mine who was a test pilot on the F-35, and he talks a lot about imposter syndrome and that he never thought that he should have been sat in that seat and, you know, was he good enough, etc. You've also done some flying in a Spitfire I saw recently, which was, I thought I was doing okay when I had a flight in Harvard a few weeks ago with a friend of mine, but then I saw you poling around the Spitfire, which made me very jealous. Tell me more about that Spitfire flight and some of the voluntary work you've been doing, I think, with Spitfires.com? Is that the organisation?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. At Goodwood, great facility. Have been so grateful to volunteer there and have loved every second of it. It's been absolutely wonderful. Just they're such a great team. We've had so much fun. I feel so lucky to be there, and Goodwood's a stunning place to be anyway.
Yes,
but,
it is, yeah.
You know, the opportunity to learn more about the aircraft and the operation side is fantastic. And to be able to be a part of someone's experience, you know, everyone, when they come to for their flight, they're so excited. They're, you know, it's such a fantastic atmosphere. And to be just even a small part of that is really lovely. Every single time I spend the day there, I come away thinking, wow, what a great day. And yeah, I was very, very fortunate to get a transit in a Spitfire. I had absolutely no idea that it was going to happen. It's not something that I thought that I would be able to do at all. I'm very grateful that they gave me the opportunity. I just got a text kind of midday going, oh, do you want to do this? And I was like, you know, absolutely, you know, drop everything else. Yes, of course, there is only one answer to that question. so yeah, and it was just incredible. It was amazing.
When they sort of pinch yourself moments.
Absolutely. In fact, it didn't even sink in probably till about 2 days ago. Honestly, it felt like a bit of a dream, but the most stunning aircraft. But the thing that really stood out to me is when you see that massively iconic view of the elliptical wing, you think of all the people that have seen that, all the people that have been involved in Spitfires, and it's pretty emotional. You can see why people get very choked up when they go for their flights. It means a lot. Like, the Spitfire is so iconic and it stands for so much. It stands for freedom and, you know, it was a whole era. So yeah, it was an amazing flight. Got to be the best flight I've done so far, hands down.
Definitely. Well, I've not been lucky enough to have a flight in anything like that yet, but I did sit in a two-seat Hurricane at White Waltham, Hurricane Heritage, they're called. And yeah, a beautiful aeroplane. And I'll admit to feeling a bit emotional just sat in it, because also having had that experience of flying in the military and sat there and then thinking, wow, you know, let's rewind the clock 80 years ago. And there were young people flying in these aircraft, putting their lives at risk, losing their lives. You know, it was and just sort of feeling what that must have been like. And it was like a snapshot of what that was like. That's incredible. I will put money on you one day stepping in this Spitfire to fly it. And if you at least don't try, Catherine, you've got to try for me so that I can say I said it here first.
Well, it's worth trying just for that, obviously.
Exactly.
No, of course, you know, like any opportunities you get to fly anything are fantastic. And I never say never to anything, but at the moment that's not in my plan, but hey.
Yeah, well,
maybe
never
one day,
say never.
Who knows?
Maybe maybe one day, exactly. So we actually sort of first got chatting, although I remember going into transit, I think, to buy one of my flight bags, and those flight bags are still around, when I was doing my flying scholarship back in 1992. We first sort of got to know each other via Instagram, which obviously, being of the younger generation, Catherine, was very familiar to you. Being slightly older wasn't as familiar to me, but I was using it for business and trying to put out a positive message there. So yours is going really, really well. I mean, I've watched it go from, I think, when I first started following you, sort of, you know, 10,000 followers, now to the sort of 230,000 followers. I know a lot of people out there go, well, it's just social media. You know, it's easy that. All you've got to do is put a picture of yourself. But I know it takes a huge amount of hard work to establish an account and to get that following. So talk to me about your Instagram account, what it was, what it is now, where you see that going, and what you're trying to do through that social media account.
Yeah, absolutely. I think actually social media is a massively interesting topic, and kind of like you said, not for the faint of heart, I don't think. But, you know, it's incredibly effective as a tool for business, for marketing, for, you know, spreading ideas and, you know, different amazing things that are going on, different initiatives. So yeah, it's very effective. Certainly my Instagram has changed and evolved a lot over the last few years. I think it properly started to get going in around 2020 time. Like a lot of people, I was trying to keep myself motivated, and I kind of funneled that into creativity on social media because there wasn't that much else to do. So so it started off really as just trying to keep myself enjoying aviation and motivated towards my flight training. And then after that, it kind of evolved a little bit into, hey guys, this is general aviation. This is what we can do. Like, isn't this so fun? Look at all the different varieties of flying we have, look at all the different facets of aviation. And I think now it's kind of moving into more, these are ways you can get involved. Like, these are the initiatives that are coming through. You should have a look at that platform. Can we use this? Can we mobilize this platform full of people for positive change? Can we use it to go, hey, we're not happy with this, let's change it. Or this is what we want, let's ask the people, like, what will actually help in aviation? Let's try and use it constructively. So it has very much evolved over the years. And I think that's a really positive thing. Right now, I'm you know, very happy with the social media. Again, I think it's a very positive, or can be a very positive tool. It's great for putting out visual role models out there. You know, love it or hate it, a lot of young people are on social media. And I think it's important that we put out really positive role models in industries like STEM industries, like aviation, like engineering. I think that's incredibly important for the future. So yeah, that's really where my focus is now. And you know, clearly I've spent a lot of time developing Elevate Her. It is mostly Instagram based at the moment, which is great. It works really well. It spreads very positive message. It promotes people who are doing great things in the industry, breaking barriers and changing perceptions. And that's a great thing. So I'm incredibly grateful for social media. It's also given me so many opportunities, like really working with the Department for Transport and with other brands as well, like Braymont, without which I would not have been able to put on my Women in Aviation lunch. So, you know, it's afforded me some amazing opportunities. And yeah, I'm very grateful for it.
And you highlighted there the Department for Transport role, which is a really great initiative to have what we call aviation ambassadors, of which you are a fantastic role model for so many young people, not just young women, but young people, you know, just and what would you say are the real benefits of this aviation ambassador role? And talk to me more about the role and what you've been able to achieve.
Yeah, so I think there's lots of benefits from being involved. We get to be involved and consult on a lot of different new initiatives and new projects, new ideas that are coming through. I think it's really positive that the department want to speak to stakeholders within the industry and go, what do you want? I think that's fantastically positive. They're very good at getting a good variety of people. So they've got people from all aspects of the industry, all age groups. And I think that's a really, really great thing about it. One of the things actually I've taken away from it most is they're really good at putting you in great learning situations. Like I was really fortunate to attend a tour of Heathrow Airport with the Minister for Aviation at the time. And what a great experience. I mean, I was just sat there just trying to absorb it all. Like all these people that are very high up in the department, and how do they talk to each other? You know, how do they set up meetings? How do they go about making changes? To me, that has been the biggest learning point. And, you know, being in those meetings and, you know, as an ambassador, it gave me access as well in a way, because I wanted to have a meeting with the minister to discuss various things that I think could be improved in the aviation industry. And I was able to do that because I was an ambassador. And that meeting in itself, I mean, what a learning experience. That was fantastic. You know, it's not every day you get to go in a meeting with a government minister. And that taught me an awful lot about meetings, about how to present yourself and your ideas as well. How do you get things done? So yeah, for me, it's been an incredibly positive experience. I've done it for 2 years now, had the best time, but I won't be applying next year again. I think it's really important that these roles have a good turnover and you get new people in with new ideas. And it's time for me personally to pass the baton on. There's a lot of people who I think will be amazing in the role. And the applications are open now. So if you're listening to it and you want to apply, go for it. I 100% recommend. Even just the experience of applying is, you will learn a lot from it. It's fantastic.
That's great. And what would you say are some of the positive impacts that the aviation ambassadors that you know, maybe have worked with or know of, have been able to achieve in the last few years?
Yeah, so a lot of it is kind of behind the scenes. So there's not too much I'm able to talk about precisely what we've done. But a lot of it is looking at things behind the scenes, seeing where we can make changes and improvements, and putting those arguments forward. For example, like the cost of flight training, we've been looking quite closely as to what can be done to improve that. And, you know, hopefully over the next 5-10 years, all these things will come through. Like, nothing moves quickly. Is one thing I have learned. But, you know, these changes, these positive changes will come through, and everyone involved is so enthusiastic about making a positive change. So yeah, it's a very exciting initiative. It's not perfect. You know, there are still improvements to be made, but I think it's quite a bold thing having all these people and letting them in to consult and talk about different things. So yeah, I think it's got a really good future ahead of it, that program.
I think it's essential. I've spoken, I can't remember what topic exactly that we were talking about on a previous podcast episode, but about sort of senior management, and you could take this through to governments, I'm sure, and not necessarily engaging with people from within their organisation or others that have knowledge of that particular industry or area, and not really using those people because, I don't know, my own, I'm not saying it's about the DfT, by the way, but when I work with larger organisations, there's a lot of people that tend to become a little bit insular. They move around in the same circles. They fear change, perhaps, because they like the lifestyle and everything else that's going on. And then they don't really go and engage with other people that perhaps have some knowledge and or passion about subjects. So actually, the fact that the Department for Transport have opened it up to other people, these aviation ambassadors of which you are one, is a really positive thing. So yeah, I'm sure things won't change quickly, but at least it is a move to change.
Sure.
So that's positive, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're a future pilot looking to give yourself the edge when it comes to getting your dream job on the flight deck, then with the industry taking off again and exciting cadet opportunities being announced, it's time to get yourself a wingman. Flight Deck Wingman's mission is to help all current and aspiring pilots maximise their potential and achieve their dream pilot job. Learn more about the industry-leading preparation services by visiting flightdeckwingman.com and checking them out on social media. Train to prepare, prepare to succeed, get yourself a wingman. Previously done another episode with four amazing female aviators out in Phoenix, Arizona, and I caught up with one not so long ago, a few months ago, to find out how she was doing, and they've all gone in different paths, but I think one of them has had a family, another one's a flight instructor, another one's just starting their airline training, so it's been really great to catch up with those ladies. And one of the things I'm really passionate about, Catherine, as you know, is diversity in aviation and all areas of that, because I sit there in the 90 to 95% of white blokes that fly aeroplanes. And so I think, you know, it's up to people like me to at least speak out and acknowledge that. And I did share some statistics in that episode that I recorded. And I just, if it's okay with you, I'm just going to run through these statistics again. And I want to have a bit of a chat about it. So as I said in this previous episode, there was some information suggested that as a percentage of women in the aviation field, less than 5% were maintenance technicians or airline executives, both CEO and chief operating officers, and approximately 5 to 10% of pilots were women, but only 1% worldwide being airline captains, which still blows my mind. But a far larger proportion of women in the field, in fact, more than 70% were travel agents or cabin crew. And as I said to the ladies at the time, you know, based on my casual observations, although things are definitely moving in the right direction, those stats still seem about right. And I've certainly, you know, we talk about social media being a positive thing. And generally for me, it is. I'm sure the same for you. But I still get people that say, well, this is rubbish. I bet you in 40 years' time, there'll be 50% women and 50% men, or, you know, an X amount of other minority pilot groups. And I'm like, well, it's funny you should say that, because in the last 40 years, that hasn't changed. So what's going to change in the next 40 years? But why do you think that is, that we've got those stats? And although there is some, you know, positive change within the industry, why are we still roughly in those statistics?
Yeah, and you know, this is a really, really interesting topic. And I also think it's a very complicated one as well. So, you know, what I'm about to say are just my thoughts and opinions. I think there's loads of different angles you can take into it and loads of different ways you can look at it. I think those statistics are really interesting. But another one that is interesting, kind of like you said, that 2 out of 5 people in the industry are women as a whole. So one thing that I get quite a lot is women just aren't interested in aviation. Like they don't care. They're not interested.
A ridiculous statement. Absolutely,
yeah, and
ridiculous.
Well, you know, if you look at comparative industries like automotive, for instance, I mean, the split is pretty even. So I don't think that argument actually makes much sense. The thing is that women seem to not be going into the key roles like, you know, pilots, engineers, air traffic controllers, etc. So one thing I think contributes to this is a lack of really strong visual role models at a young age. So, you know, like female captains going to schools, female RAF pilots, because even, you know, I've seen studies where they ask kids to draw like a pilot, a firefighter, stuff like that today. And you
great can, video, I've seen that.
Yeah, I don't need to tell you like what they do. I mean, even recently I had an experience of a young girl, she was only three, and I asked her, you know, do you like aviation? Do you like planes? And she goes, oh no, I like girl things. And I was like, what? That's crazy. Like this, you know, it's not a girl or a boy thing. It's just it's an everything. You know, if you like flying, you like flying. So I think, you know, a lot more can be done in the real like grassroots end of the industry, in the, you know, young people, showing them what these fantastic women that are breaking boundaries today are doing, so that when it goes further down the line, there are a lot more young girls that go, actually, I really want to try this and I feel like I belong there and that it's for me. I think, again, it's a complicated issue, and we do also need to be careful, I think, about things like hiring bias at the top end of the industry, because then obviously you're hiring out of a pool that's basically 4.7%, which is not great for everyone. I also think it can be detrimental to women in aviation. I think sometimes it can make women think, oh, am I just here because of my gender? Where we don't want anyone to think that, of course, like the best person for the role should always get the role. But there should be equal opportunity always in going for that role. And I think that's a really important factor to consider as well. So yeah, I think a lot more effort could be put in at the younger age groups that are coming through now. And I think that is happening. And I do think that probably over the next 10 years, we will start to see a shift. I think, again, social media has been incredibly important. I mean, the amount of amazing women on Instagram who are posting about not just flying, but engineering and, you know, even astronauts. I mean, it's incredible. And those are such important visual role models for young women to have. So yeah, I think the future is very bright. I do think it's quite a complicated issue, but I think we will start to see a change actually in the next 5 to 10 years.
Definitely. And I think that young women at a very young age are not necessarily exposed to the possibility of becoming a pilot, because as you said with that girl, you know, and listen, hey, if that young person is in, and if it's a little boy that has into so-called little girl things, I mean, who cares, you know, either way, whatever you're into,
right? Yeah, of course,
you know.
Yeah.
But I think that's so true, and not just with women in aviation. You know, I've had a lot of people on my courses with Flight Deck Wingman, and in fact, one conversation really stood out to me recently. It was a young guy of Pakistani heritage, and he said to me that we were talking about the first time essentially that he saw a pilot in uniform that was also of Pakistani heritage. And you were saying there that, you know, not enough role models. And he said, do you know what? He said, this pilot wasn't just a role model. They were a real model. So I saw someone in front of that looked like me, that sounded like me, you know, that knew me. And I think whether, you know, you're a young woman or somebody of Pakistani heritage or some other minority pilot group in this country, to have that real model is a really positive thing. And I do hope that whether it's, you know, military or airlines, that we do ultimately remove this prejudice, whether, you know, it's sexuality, gender, ethnicity, whatever it is, but it does still exist. What else would you say we can do to change this behavior from people, or, you know, maybe young women thinking that they have to conform, and, you know, maybe other people within the industry that are not as supportive as they could be? What can we do to try and change that, would you say? I know it's a big topic, but any things that you can think of?
I mean, it is a big topic, and there is an awful lot you can get into over it. I think for the majority to maybe consider it from another perspective.
Yeah.
For instance, you know, how about, you know, like picture a young lad walking into a flight school and it's all kind of older women that are there to greet him, to take him flying, you know, just like a slightly different perspective, and go, actually, you know what, that would be quite hard for a young girl to walk into a flight school and go, you know, you really have to want to do it when you're on your own. It can be quite a lonely place. So, you know, I try and consider people just be slightly, you know, empathetic where they can, and to other people's experiences. You know, Everything I've said here, though, is not to take away from any of the male instructors and mentors I've had, though, because
100%.
You know, I would, myself and so many other female pilots, we would not be here without them. You know, all of my role models in flying have been men, and they're incredible, and they've been fantastic mentors, and I've learned so much from them. So, you know, that I'm not saying that it's all bad. I just think it could be a lot better than what it is.
Definitely. You know, one of the things I try to do is, I call out behaviour that I don't think is appropriate. And as I said to the ladies from the Women in Aviation podcast that we recorded, I wanted to acknowledge some historical behaviour of mine that wasn't appropriate and could have been harmful and, you know, certainly wouldn't do now. And I'm happy to acknowledge it, but I'm also happy to call it out now. And actually, if there are any people here who are still making those disparaging comments, and it's not just women, I see a lot of stuff around transgender people and people of different ethnic backgrounds. And, you know, it's always, oh, it's just a bit of banter. Mm. Well, it might be to you, but how is that going to impact that person? You know, what impact is that going to have on the rest of the community? How is that going to help improve things? And I call it out, but it's very difficult to call it out sometimes.
Yeah, no, I totally get that, yeah.
But I do, and I do it fairly regularly at an appropriate time. But, you know, part of me thinks, oh, why should I have to even do it at an appropriate time? Why can't I just call it out? Because, you know, this person's got such a lack of understanding and empathy of the situation, or such a big ego that they can't begin to understand all of these problems. Mm. And, you know, certainly I understand. And I'm not saying, and absolutely not saying that young people that are also, you know, white men are not also having problems, because I know they are. But
of course,
actually,
yeah, absolutely.
The whole, again, huge topic, but the whole purpose of feminism is to rising tide lifts all boats. We should help everybody that needs a helping hand. And that's what equity is all about. And it's not that some people are in these jobs because they were female or they were from a different culture. They're there because they are the most competent people.
Totally. I mean, you know, the industry is incredible, but in the next few years, it will be facing a lot of challenges. We can only face those challenges if we can access the full breadth of talent within the UK in terms of, you know, wherever you come from, whoever you are, it's got to be open to everyone.
Absolutely. And that's it, isn't it? You're not telling me that the 95% statistically who are pilots right now are all the most talented people in the world, because that's just simply not true. You know, that's not true. So we need to expose more people to the possibilities of aviation careers, or certainly careers that have traditionally been dominated by one demographic, and hopefully it will change over time. So great job that you're doing. That leads me nicely actually into Elevate Her and this initiative, which is fantastic. And I know that, you know, your passion, quite obviously, Catherine, is to find strength in a community of people and to help each other out. So yeah, I was when we chatted before this podcast, you said to me, you know, Elevate Her is not anti-men, we're pro-women, which I think is really great.
That's
so
exactly,
tell me a bit more about Elevate Her and why you started it, where you see it going, some of the things you've been able to achieve so far.
For sure, yeah, absolutely. So I actually started it probably a little bit selfishly, because I wanted to meet other like-minded women, and I wanted to be able to, you know, chat with them and share stories. And again, you know, this is not to detract from the amazing men that I've had during my training and as mentors, but I think there is something quite special about connecting with someone like yourself, you know, who can share your perspective. And yeah, I just wanted to meet some other women in aviation. So in 2022, I essentially put out an open invite to any women in aviation to come for a lunch at Brighton City Airport. So hired out a room, got a lunch, invited a whole bunch of people, and just waited basically for someone to turn up.
It was, but they did.
They did. And you know, it was a bit of a rogue move for me, to be honest, because I'm not probably the most social, and you know, like I said before, I'm probably not the most confident person in the world. So yeah, it was a bit rogue, but I was delighted. We had about 40 women turn up. And it was just, honestly, even now, like, it gets me kind of quite emotional because it was such an amazing day. You know, we chatted, we had, you know, everyone, engineers, air traffic controllers, lots of pilots, instructors, examiners, and everyone was so supportive and everyone came away having made great connections and just had a lot of fun, honestly. We just chatted about flying all day. It was great, just with like-minded people. So yeah, that was fantastic. And I went away from that event and I thought, you know what, I really want to take this forward in and make it more useful. You know, like, it's great to have these meetups, but I wanted to take it forward in a more meaningful way. And that's really how Elevate Her started. So there's kind of two parts of it. There's the online resource platform. So basically, I spent from November until May compiling as much information as I could across the industry. So, you know, scholarships, all of the ATOs, all of the current CAA consultations, so you can have your say on different matters in the industry, who to follow on social media to be inspired, you know. I try to compile it all into a platform that is very regularly updated with all the newest information. And although Elevate Her is tailored towards women in aviation, it's totally free and available for anyone to use at any time. Like, all the content on there is for everybody. And then there's the second part of Elevate Her, which is probably the most important aspect, and that is the community. So we have a very active Instagram. In fact, today we just passed 5,000 followers.
Excellent.
Which is a pretty cool milestone because it only launched in May.
Fantastic.
And, yeah, so we have a lot of great role models we promote on there. We put out really positive content. We do some more statistic content just to get people thinking and kind of challenge stereotypes and break boundaries. And we also run events. So the biggest event we run was earlier this year with in collaboration with Braymont Watches at their amazing facility, The Wing. And we had over 70 women in aviation attend that event, again, inclusive of everybody. We've had the wing walkers there. We had engineers. We had Mandy Hickson, who I'm sure you know.
Mandy and her husband Craig came gliding with me and Liz. I think one of my friends, Liz, flew a glider into your Brighton airport event, indeed, for lunch, she landed it and then flew back again, which is pretty
absolutely
cool.
It was great. I've got so many photos of all of us pouring. It was like a new, very very cool glider, and we all had a look at it. No, it was fantastic. But yeah, so Mandy was a keynote speaker this year, and it was just, again, a great positive event. I think actually it was the largest gathering of female pilots in Europe, which was pretty cool. And so yeah, here we go, next year bigger and better.
Excellent. Good for you. What would you say to any guys out there that are listening to you right now? And then the same, what would you say to any young women out there that are maybe also listening to this?
I don't know if I particularly want to differentiate them, to be honest. I just say to everyone that, you know, we're all on the side of aviation. We all want to go flying. And that really unites everybody. We all want to fly. We all want to do the best that we can. And just go for it, you know, be kind to each other, do the best you can yourself, and have fun. Like, this is supposed to be fun at the end of the day, you know, so just enjoy it, be kind to everybody, just do your thing. We're all on the side of aviation.
Absolutely. What other sort of change would you like to see within the industry, Catherine?
I think a massive topic, again, another huge topic, but a massive topic that, you know, if really does affect everyone, is the cost of flight training. I think there are some things that could be done to, even if not limit, but help. For instance, you know, having similar loan schemes that you would do if you're going to uni, for instance, for students. Why shouldn't student pilots be included in students, like uni students? I don't really understand why not. And I think that would make a lot of difference for a lot of people and in terms of accessibility. So I think, you know, the cost of flight training as a whole is huge. And I don't know if you can take a lot of thinking, planning, talking to limit the actual cost, but there's a lot of things you can do surrounding it that would help and make a huge difference to people getting into the industry. I think that's really the next big question that we all need to be looking at.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and again, if we're talking about the most competent people, what some people say is the best people for the job, but if you've only got people who've got, you know, been bankrolled somehow to get into this career, I mean, of course, there are people who work over a good number of years to self-fund their flying training. But then if you've got people who've got, here's £100,000, off you go, do your flying training. I'm not saying they're not competent. Obviously, they must be to pass their license. But how do you know, again, that we've got, you know, the most competent people in the role? And another sort of thing that I hear, which I think is a little bit narrow-minded, is if you work hard enough, you can achieve anything. And I don't. That's just simply not true. Hard work brings a lot. Definitely. I know that. I work very hard. But at the same time, you know, if you're living in
halfway,
you do somehow. I mean, if you know, if perhaps you're in an inner city flat in London and, you know, one of your dad's, you know, incarcerated, your mum's not really available, you've got two siblings to look after, how on earth are you going to get yourself to an airfield to even go and jump in a glider?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
But yes, I think it is a huge subject, but I totally agree with you. And regulation as well in the industry. And hopefully that's something that the Department for Transport are looking at as well.
Yeah, I mean, I do know that they are looking at it quite seriously. You know, is a massive topic and one that everyone's talking about. But I do think there are a lot of things that can be done to make positive changes. Okay, you may not tackle the whole thing in one go. I don't think, I mean, I've done a lot of research into this myself. I don't think there's like a one, you know, silver bullet answer to this. I think that you can look at a lot of different ways, but you can also change it in a very positive way by changing a lot of things. And I think, you know, some emphasis needs to be put on having more bursaries to help with accessibility. And even, you know, the airlines are coming back and doing some amazing things in terms of cadet schemes. That is so positive to see. That's fantastic. We need more of that. Because at the end of the day, like, I mean, I'm not a commercial pilot, but from where I see it, commercial flying is vocational. Like, if you're called to do it, you have to do it, you know, and everyone should have that opportunity to go ahead and fulfill their dream. You know, and those are the right people, you know, the ones that feel that it's a vocation, that they have to fly. Those are the people that you want to attract.
Absolutely. And one of the nice things I think about Elevate Her and your own Instagram channel and my business at Flight Deck Wingman is that we can be independent, really. So I really like that, because there's an angle to have some influence and to affect some change without necessarily getting yourself in a whole lot of bother or caught up politically and stuff. So that's something that I think we're probably both quite passionate about.
Definitely.
One of the other things I want to chat to you about, Catherine, is that you've been up in a glider, which I saw at the South Down Gliding Club. So all of my listeners and you will know that that is something that I'm just absolutely mentally keen on. So, talk to me about how you got into gliding and what else you want to do. Because I also know that, go ahead and chat to me more about that.
No, I mean, you know, shout out South Down Gliding Club. They're great. Absolutely loved it down there. I must say that my gliding experience is fairly limited, but the flights I have done, and, you know, that's only due to time, by the way. Like, if I had the time, I'd be flying everything all the time. But, you know, it was fantastic. Absolutely amazing. I've never experienced anything like that before. In fact, so much so that my first flight, I walked up to the glider with my headset.
I love that. Excellent.
And I was holding it like, why am I holding this? I don't know. The guy was looking at me like, what are you doing? And I don't know what I'm doing. But it was a great experience. It's fantastic for general handling. It was so peaceful. It was just stunning. I mean, we got the South Downs here, and that's a lovely place to fly anyway. But yeah, I just really, really enjoyed it. And also, I tell you what the nicest thing was, it was the community. I really felt like going to a gliding club, there was such a community, you know, everyone was there all day. They're so inviting, you know, so welcoming, and made such an effort to include me, and, you know, to include new people. And I think that's so lovely. In fact, I went down there quite recently to help out on a Go Gliding Day, one of the new initiatives. And again, it was so welcoming. Like, they got loads of people from cadets and from local schools in. And what a great idea. I think it's a fantastic place to start your aviation career and, you know, obviously continue flying there throughout. But gliding clubs are really unsung heroes of GA, I think.
Definitely. And you know, all of GA is coming under a bit of pressure, isn't it, from airspace, you know, expansion and more regulatory changes and things like that. But yeah, I mean, for me, yes, I love gliding. And actually, weirdly, out of all of the different types of aeroplane I've flown, and there must be 60 odd different types now, the gliding is still my favourite form of flying. Mm. You've not been cross country yet, have you? You've
not actually... I have not. I've not had that.
I know. We need to do that. And I promise
you. No, I'd love to.
Yeah, I promise you we'll see that. But the weather's been diabolical, certainly for gliding. It's been awful, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think all round actually this summer, it's not been the best, to be honest.
No, it really hasn't. But yeah, like you said just a few minutes ago, with all these cadet schemes opening, you know, and actually young people, and well, actually some of those schemes I think are open to age 55. So really encompassing all age groups as well. But a lot of people have never really done anything in aviation. They say, I want to be a pilot. Well, what have you actually done? Have you even had a trial lesson in the glider? No. Mm. Well, what does that say about your motivation? So go and have a trial lesson in the glider. Go and get stuck into it. And as you said, the community is fantastic because everybody has to pull together to help each other out to get a glider airborne. Doesn't happen without that. And of course, just sort of on my training side from what I train people in, it helps develop people's competencies, particularly young people, because then you're learning about safety, teamwork, you know, resilience when you're 100 kilometers away at 500 feet, you know, thermaling with a seagull over a church steeple trying to get home. So there's all sorts of things that it brings. So great. Well, we'll definitely do that glider flight. Catherine, I want to ask you a random question now. And if you've listened to any of the episodes, you'll know I've got this section called the winging it section.
Yeah.
And I promise you that my guests, for anyone listening, don't know what this question is. You don't know what this question is,
no,
do you?
I don't. In fact, I'm quite scared.
Don't be scared. Take your time. So are you ready for your winging it question?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. If you could be any one of the following, who would it be and why? And I've got three choices for you.
Okay.
Number one, lead guitarist of a massive rock band. That'd be mine, by the way. Uma Thurman or the creator of Velcro?
Wow, that's actually a lot harder than I thought I was going to be.
They've all got pros and cons, haven't they?
Yeah, they really do. I mean, honestly, like, I'm not going to lie, I'm kind of... rock band would probably be my second choice, but I am so terrible at singing. I kind of can't even picture myself in that role.
Guitarist, so you don't have to sing.
Okay. I think just if anyone who knows me, who's seen me do anything dance or music related, would know that it's probably not for me. But I do know I'd probably go for the inventor of Velcro because my reasoning. My reasoning for this would be is that I'm assuming the inventor of Velcro has earned quite a lot of money from it, and
exactly.
I would just go flying. I would have a big hangar full of lots of aircraft, and I would go on lots of holidays with my friends and family and just enjoy. I think probably would be my answer.
Absolutely, although I think I'd still probably, because my ego's not going to let me not be the lead guitarist of a massive rock band, just for that one moment where you get
I mean, it's a very appealing, like, close second, definitely.
Yes, definitely. Thanks, Catherine. Great answer. You know, it's funny, when I interviewed, now I think Wing Commander, certainly Squadron Leader Martin Pert, and he was Red One with the Red Arrows at the time, and we were chatting, and he said that his hand-eye coordination when playing football and things was so bad that he couldn't do it. I can't remember what the question was to his winging it question, but that surprised me, actually, for Red One and the Red Arrows. They'd have such bad hands-to-ball coordination.
It's quite surprising, yeah.
So, just some closing thoughts, if I could, Catherine. If you could go and chat to your 15-year-old self and meet that person, what would you say to them?
I would say, first off, you're doing great.
Yeah.
Because I think 15 is quite a difficult age, and I certainly put a lot of pressure on myself when it came to exams and, you know, I had a wonderful education, and I was very grateful. I know it's not easy for your parents to put you through such a good education, and I really, really wanted to make the most of it. So I would like to tell myself that actually you're doing okay. Like, you know, it's all good. And then I would say, go with your intuition, because I always kind of thought maybe I wanted to be in business of some kind, but I always thought that's not for me. I'm not that kind of person. But actually you are. If that's who you think you are deep down, go for it. Like, you know, just trust yourself, believe in yourself, and yeah, you'll get there in the end.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really nice positive message. I know there's a lot of people, it's been very difficult for young people, especially with COVID. I mean, you know, as adults, you sort of go, well, that was a bit of a weird time. Got through that okay. but it's still impacting a lot of people. I know lots of friends that have got, you know, teenagers that have really struggled through that time. And so, as you say, it's a difficult time. So hopefully both of us are pushing positive messages out there to young people that follow us on social media that, yeah, go for it. You know, you don't know if you don't try. So why not?
Exactly. Yeah.
Brilliant. Catherine, thank you so much for chatting to me today. It's been really nice to get to know you more. We need to do that glider flight. I want to do aerobatics with you in a bulldog and also have a go flying a helicopter again. So if you ever have a spare seat, can you send me a text like that Spitfire pilot did?
No, definitely. No, thank you so much for having me on. This has been a really lovely conversation. And yeah, I'm going to hold you to the glider flight and you definitely need to have another go in a helicopter. That's for sure.
We'll do that. Fantastic. Wherever we see it, that'll be on Instagram, I'm sure. So,
definitely. <yeah. laughs>
Thanks again, Catherine. Really nice to talk to you.
Thank you.